Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Bitcoin Way podcast. I'm your host, Michael Jordan. I appreciate you being here. I just finished up a conversation with Mark Kreitzman of Afani. Afani is a cell plan provider that protects you against SIM swaps primarily and is offering new cybersecurity related services as they go. In their 4.5 years in business, they've never had one of their customers SIM swapped, which is awesome. And this is an increasingly prevalent attack as well as a highly consequential attack that Afani has figured out how to mitigate. I would encourage you to check them out. I will give you full disclosure. We do have a partnership with them at the Bitcoin Way, but love what they're doing, appreciate what they're doing. And I think especially for folks in the Bitcoin space who might have it be known publicly that you have Bitcoin, protecting against these sorts of threats is crucial. I hope you'll find this as helpful as I did. Alrighty, like I said in the intro, I've got Mark here. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, so this is round two. We had some recording issues with a different platform. We're trying this again, but looking forward to the conversation nonetheless. I think this is incredibly important stuff that you're doing at Afani. And for Bitcoiners, I mean, this is their world is privacy and self-sovereignty. And I think that's something you deliver an important aspect of that. But before we get into Afani, could you tell me just your journey, your background, how you got to Afani and what led up to that?
Yeah, so I've been sort of a techie nerd my entire life, and I started getting into startups around 2002 and working for cybersecurity companies, and I worked for founders, and we sold one off to Microsoft, which is a cloud email solution. I worked for another one, which is a cloud web security, and that company was acquired by Cisco Systems, and then sort of jumped around a little bit, and then wanted to start my own company. And so I happened to be attempting to do my own startup that was in the crypto space. And I got SIM swapped in the middle of Arizona desert while I was driving to see my father in Southern Arizona. And I happened to be like right in the middle of Phoenix and Tucson. So I got SIM swapped, my mobile account was stolen away. And I had a choice of attempting to drive about 30 minutes to go to a Walmart and then beg somebody to use their phone to report it, or go all the way to my father's house. And that's what I chose to do. So 45 minutes later, I pulled up, got close to the garage, Wi-Fi kicked in, and 6 password resets went up my phone. And found out that I had to trick a third-party store to find out exactly what happened to me. But it turned out that a third-party phone store employee out of Memphis, Tennessee, stole my mobile account away, had control for 61 minutes, and then ported it back to try and hide it. And I didn't sleep for about 90 days. It was, hit me financially. And obviously, you know, they get into your cloud and email. And so that's kind of devastating. And so I sought out to see, I figured somebody had to solve this. And I found the only person who claimed they solved it. I talked to him. He happened to be in the Bitcoin game and part of a small team that was building a large Bitcoin ATM network. We hit it off, and he happened to become his own really mobile operator just for himself. It's a very expensive solution for yourself, but he had been hit with so many SIM swaps. And so I said, hey, I want to help you take this to market. And the first thing we did was change the name to Afani. And now it's been about 4.5 years under the Afani brand. And we're rocking here. So it's we're in a unique spot that every time there's a data breach, AT&T just got hit for 71 million records, and people go on Twitter and announce they got SIM swapped, or they go into Coinbase forums and Telegram and say they got SIM swapped. And unfortunately, for them, they become victims. It's ends up being marketing for what we do, because then people seek out a solution like I attempted to do, and there's Afani. So it's a good place to be in at the moment.
Terrific. So okay, so let's talk about SIM swap. So first of all, could you just explain in the simplest terms what a SIM swap is, and like maybe give an example of how a bad actor might, how that might play out? And then also I'm sort of curious on top of that, like how, when you were SIM swapped, how does that grant someone access to, cloud storage, email, that sort of thing?
Yeah, so a SIM swap is, let's say you have an iPhone 12 today and you go to the store today and you buy an iPhone 15. You're obviously going to ask the store just to, hey, port my number from my old phone over to my new one. And that is a legal SIM swap. And so an illegal, nefarious SIM swap is when a hacker does that same thing, except they're taking it from your phone and putting it on their phone. And they could be your next door neighbor, they could live in an apartment beneath you, or they could be thousands of miles away. And they're basically using different tactics, whether it's they're bribing phone store employees or working with an employee, or they're purchasing your authentication information from an insider, or social engineering. Just simply somebody has done their research on you and they're going to impersonate you. And so they're basically going to like T-Mobile, Verizon, AT&T and saying, hey, my name is Mark and I've lost my phone. I'm going to catch a, I'm at the airport. I got to catch a flight. I have another phone. Can you please port my number from, over to this new phone I have with a new SIM card or eSIM in it. And then once that happens, your mobile service is bricked on your phone. You can't even call the carrier to say, hey, I got a problem. You got to go to another phone. Hopefully you catch it for one. Like if they get it before you sleep, then you're in big trouble. But once that hacker has your phone number, that means that they now can call, they can receive calls, they can text, receive texts, and use data under your name. And so what you can do with that is, to give you an example, if I was a bad person, I wanted to go after you, I most likely would have done my homework on you. And I would see what I can find out on social media and on LinkedIn. And then I would use an advanced AI search tool. And these are like search tools that are like business search tools to find like lead information. That this is not like a nefarious AI tool. It's just regular off-the-shelf AI type sales tools. And so once I have information from you, I can run an AI search tool on it that's going to go a couple layers deep and find out every email about you. It'll find landline numbers that you've had in the past that maybe you forgot that you even ever had. It'll find mobile numbers that you might have given up years ago. The amount of information on us now is just, easily obtainable. And so if I did my homework on you, then and I take your mobile account away, then there's a couple different things I could do. I could have figured out like maybe you have online where you've bragged about using Coinbase or Bitfinex. And so I might start there, but I could take all your emails and put them into Coinbase, for example, and then just one by one say forgot password and see what kind of reaction I get. I could do that to bank accounts, I could do it to your email accounts. And if it's just simple SMS, then that account's toast. I'll have taken it over in a matter of 60 seconds. And then I'll change the password on it. So now you can't even get into those accounts. Now, if it says enter a six-digit authenticator code, for example, now I know that I have to go and try and reset your authenticator app. And so I'm going to try and get into your emails, maybe daisy chain through emails if you've somehow like sent, connected them somehow. But the AI search tools may already have found those emails. And I'm going to look for notifications from like Duo or Google Authenticator, and I'm going to attempt to try and reset that Authenticator app as well. And so at Finny, we have a lot of people that call us up, and they're victims already, and they're like, oh, okay, well I just got SIM swapped a week ago, and I want to switch to Finny now. And I would say about 35 to 40% of those people were using Authenticator apps. And so you want to use Authenticator apps if you possibly can. SMS by itself is very weak, and so you want to use Authenticator apps. But if the application you're using can use the YubiKey, then you want to go to a YubiKey style. And then of course, the number one way to protect like your crypto is just cold storage, period. So if you take your Bitcoin and you move it into cold storage, well, a SIM swap doesn't really impact that. But if you own Bitcoin and people know, or own crypto in general, even though it may be cold storage, you're still going to be a target. And they may go after your crypto, but since they can't get to it, they'll go after your iCloud or cloud, your email. And if they can get enough information about you to sell, then they can sell access to that information on the dark web. And so, the privacy matters, guarding your email and all the information in your emails, is pretty important as well.
Got it. So this is just a question of personal curiosity. So if you could have a, like, would it be prudent to have multiple authenticator apps and use them to authenticate one another in the event? So just so that way, if you're using authenticator apps as often as possible, you can't reset one of the, passwords and credentials with a phone number. 'Cause it seems like the phone number, like the SIM swap exposure, is really the big vulnerability here. Is that
It
right?
is that. I mean, that is the it's the easiest one. So the SIM swapping is the easiest way to try and hack somebody, right? And so I'm a victim, and I still have PTSD over it from 2018, and so I kind of live on the paranoid side of everything. And so my first priority is cold storage, and for the crypto. And then where possible, the hardware key. And with authenticator apps, I use multiple accounts where even like small amounts, because I the only thing that I have it online in a actual account is just enough to play around trading for me. So each of those accounts has a separate email, and each of those uses a separate authenticator app, and they're all three different authenticator apps as well. And some people will say, like, well, I'm safe because I put my authenticator app on a different device. And it's kind of irrelevant. That like the hacker doesn't care where your apps are. Once they get into your if they SIM swap you, then you can put your authenticator app on 10 different other devices, and it's completely irrelevant.
Got it.
So there's a couple myths about the SIM swapping. Some people think that because you can have the most secure phone there is. And so, and we've partnered with a couple of them because our customers kept asking us. And then, well, actually, the secure what has happened over the last couple of years is these secure phone providers will come to us and say, Mark, we have this really, really secure phone, and it's a de-Googled phone, and it's private and difficult to hack into until you put a SIM card in it. And so we've ended up having relationships with a couple of these secure phone providers, such as Above Phone and Copperhead OS and Mark 37. But the reality is that you could have the most secure hardware, the most secure operating system on that device. You could have the best VPN and a paid-for antivirus on it, and use that device just purely in private. You're still vulnerable to SIM swaps, because you could actually take that device, put it in a Faraday bag, take that Faraday bag, put it in a safe, drop that in South Lake Tahoe. The SIM swappers don't care, because when they move your mobile account from that phone over to the phone in their hand, that all that security you invested in on your device is completely irrelevant.
Yeah, it's been
It's just money.
resurrected on that live phone.
Yeah, so now it's over here, and that's why cold storage is so key. And so, of course, that's I mean, one of the things about this industry is that some people just aren't techie enough, and so they're sort of afraid to use an authenticator app or use the YubiKey style or do the cold storage, because they're sort of afraid, like, I may make it so secure that someday I can't even access it. And so there's going to have to be a lot of education, on how to do that. But in the meantime, these SIM swaps are very damaging.
So I understand that your bias is toward security, especially as a victim of a SIM swap. How do you think about, though, the convenience security trade-off? Because, like, I think about, like, for myself, it's I'm sort of in a personal push right now toward more privacy, more security, buttoning down a lot of these things, and think my wife and I'll be moving our phone plans to Afani, actually. But I think for a lot of people, they're still kind of, unless they've been the victim and experienced that pain, they're a bit more complacent. What's sort of the, I guess there are sort of different levels of security that you can get to. And the deeper in you go, the more inconvenient it becomes to do anything, to move data around, to, just sort of li live life. Where do you think about like drawing that line? Or do you just blow that line up and say, as much security as I can have, I'll take the headache?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I mean, we've thought a lot about that in terms of like what we do at Afani and like how are we going to add more security and so I mean the beauty of Afani is that you can buy AT&T directly or you can buy AT&T through Afani. And so once you're ported over and you're using AT&T through Afani, like you don't change your behavior. You don't have to really change. I mean, we tell people to be smart, right? Don't click on random links and images that look suspicious and things like that. But in terms of like calling and emailing and using your phone, there is no change of behavior. The only limitation is that you can no longer go into a store and get support on the mobile service, but we have a 7x24. I think I've been in cybersecurity for really since 2022, and I would say that you can create the most secure cybersecurity solution that is absolutely fantastic. But if it requires anyone to change their behavior at some point in time, that person will spend their effort to how to get around it. And so when you expect people to go change and modify their behavior, then that's where it's gonna start to fail. And there's been a lot of companies that have come and gone. A lot of secure phones, for example, that they put out a nice, really super secure phone, and a bunch of people have bought it, and then within like 90 days, they're paperweights because it's like it required them to have to think and do things on the phone just to watch YouTube, and people just want to pick up their phone and watch YouTube. So I think the reality is that you have to make things really easy on the end user. We have the common theme of like our customer. We have celebrities, people in Hollywood, professional athletes. We have some people that have handlers, right? That manage things for them and manage their security and make decisions for them. And they always say the same thing when I'm talking to them, which is they're like, Mark, if I'm going to hand this person a phone and he wants to use AT&T, use AT&T now. And we're going to hand him a phone. We're not even going to tell him it's a Fonny. And so we don't want anything, because you can't tell some like pop singer, like, hey, you're going to have to change your behavior on the phone. Like they spend all day, taking photos and doing Instagram reels to promote themselves. And they're like, yeah, they're never going to like change. And so I think that's the beauty of what we're doing. And any kind of feature that we've talked about is most likely always going to be in the network where it's unseen. You don't change your behavior. We're just adding layers of security in the actual mobile service itself.
Makes sense. So tell me a little bit more about these de-Googled phones. So I find these very intriguing. So the challenge I have personally is that, so my family, we're a very close family. We all live in close proximity. And so we're doing events together and we'll take trips occasionally together and we're taking pictures and sharing and everyone's got iPhones. And so we use, shared albums, which is probably not the best idea, but I'm working on self-sovereignty of hosting my own files right now as well. But it's a convenient place to aggregate those photos, right? Is for someone like who isn't prepared to just give up my iPhone because of the convenience factor, sort of socially speaking, could there be any advantage to having either call forwarding to one of these secure phones or a separate line and using it for travel or for like other purposes? What sort of the is there a way that that sort of phone, a de-Googled phone, could still fit into my life? I guess is sort of the question.
Yeah, I mean, I think the common pattern is that people still want, they want their iPhone, they want the iCloud and the sharing and they want to use, Twitter and TikTok and so, I think the pattern is that they'll have that fun phone and family phone, and then they use the de-Googled phone for all the banking and the proprietary things. And so we're starting to see more and more people keep those on separate devices. And so, for me, I mean, I'm in the mobile business, so So I have a reason to have multiple phones. So, but I have four different phones, and each of those phones have a specific purpose. So, like I said, I'm kind of paranoid. So I've got a phone that has, like Twitter and those things, on that phone, and that one doesn't even have cellular service. But the other three, one is just for Afani, one is my proprietary, and then one is just sort of like family. And so I even separated up, but I wouldn't, tell other people to do that. But the Deagle phones, there's pros and cons about them. It'd be difficult right now to use it as like your main phone if you have a family that's using iPhones. You're not gonna have that much fun with them.
But like, is I'm trying to think of like a use case, well, actually, I guess with the de-Googled phones, part of my question, you said like some people use them for online, for their banking or whatever, and they'll separate that from, their iPhone or their more common Android. Do some of them support the entirety of the Google App Store, like your bank, banking apps and that sort of thing? Because I know you told me when we previously spoke, you mentioned that like one of them, I think the app store is like very limited. Like you can't, there's no text messaging. It's like Signal or Telegram or one of these sorts of apps are really your only messaging options. Are there some that are more flexible, I guess, in the apps that they support, but are still s relatively much more secure?
Yeah, I mean they do. I mean, it's if there's a very well-known like bank, that's most likely going to be on the Aurora apps. So there's one basic app store that all the Deagle phones use. It's called the Aurora App Store, and so anyone could look at that online to see if the apps meet their needs. Now, in terms of like Google apps, like YouTube and Maps. Like the Google apps are not going to be there. And so you can use YouTube, but you have to use it through an app that sort of hides you from Google. It sort of it allows you access to be able to look at YouTube apps. And I haven't used it in a while, but so you can use your applications in a different way, but it's more of like a browser type experience for some of the applications. But the de-Googled app, I mean, the whole purpose of it's basically modified Android, and they've removed all the Google system apps because these are like data collection points for Google, and then all of Google's apps, and then they're also access points for hackers. And so they remove all of that. And also it doesn't require an email to set it up. So, if you go out and buy a Samsung Android phone, then it's going to ask you to enter a Gmail email in order to set that phone up. But a Deagle phone doesn't require that. So they're just more private and more hacker proof. And the fact that you're limited to this app store where all the apps are already they're vetted out much more deeply than the Apple Store or the Google Play Store.
Got it. Okay, so we've danced around the topic of Afani, and we've talked a little bit about some of the value. Could you explain what Afani is, what you do, and maybe specifically how you would help prevent something like a SIM swap?
Yeah, so what we sell, it's super simple. So we're set up as a reseller of AT&T and Verizon. And so, obviously you could go to AT&T, buy it directly, or you can buy AT&T from Afani. And there's a couple major differences of buying AT&T through Afani. So one is, if you're going to use AT&T through Afani, once we port your number over, or we can give you a new number, but most people port their number over, then we lock that down. And everything we do from that point on is manual. And so people will say, like, oh, you guys got great tech, and I really like your tech. It's like, actually, what we've done is the opposite. We've stripped out all the tech. There's no free Netflix, no free Disney, no free Hulu or anything like that. That's all third-party data collection and possible like leakage of identity. So we're basically locking it down. Everything becomes manual. And then what we do is for your AT&T account, we lock out all the AT&T employees, the AT&T stores, third-party stores, independent retailers, their call centers from being able to access that account. And it's and then we also don't provide the carrier with your personal information. And so your payment information, your social security, your email, all of that, like the carrier's never given that information. And if you were already an AT&T customer and you moved to a Fani, we actually go through a process that eliminates that and cleans that record up. And that's kind of important. And that's the privacy part of it that I'll talk about a little bit later. But it's to the point where if you went into an AT&T store and hadn't gave them your passport, driver's license, and anything they wanted, and just said, like, can you tell me how much data I've used? They're going to try and help you, but after about 90 seconds of playing around on their keyboard, they're going to say, there must be somebody else you can call. We can't access your account. And that's exactly what we want. So what we're doing is we're eliminating all of the humans in the middle that can be tricked through impersonation, that could be bribed, that could be the hacker themselves, that could be working with an outsider, sort of organized crime, or eliminating like call centers, you know, because basically you call their 800 number and you're giving that person your verification information. And so they could collect that on the side and sell a spreadsheet of, you know, 100 people to like these SIM swappers. So we're eliminating all of that access. And so that's these are, you know, human middle of the man type attack points. And then we become Fani becomes your 7x24 support. And for any of the risky transactions, you have to go through 11 layers of verification. And if there's any missteps, there may be like a video call required. And then you can also add your own step. So if you wanted to, if you wanted to say, hey, I want this question to be in there, or you want to have your own passphrase, then you could actually add a step in there as well. And then we also back it up with a $5 million insurance policy. So another big difference is that all the carriers have like, you know, API type access to where companies like Afani can just pull customers over if we have enough information, and don't even need to call AT&T to even ask their permission. And so what they've done is they've done the math and they figured out that it is cheaper to have sort of a weak port out verification and then deal with it in arbitration courts than just to hire, you know, thousands of people to do the verification that we do. And that's what, and then if you get SIM swapped, what you find out is that they've slipped in arbitration clauses over the last couple of years. So you can't even sue them. If you lost $1 million, you're forced to go to arbitration. And so you're going to end up settling for 35, 40 cents on the dollar. And I know that because I talked to a number of attorneys that specialize in SIM swaps. And I've been asked to be an expert witness multiple times to defend victims. And I just don't have time to do it. But you know, there's now starting to be attorneys and law firms that actually specialize in SIM swap issues.
That is wild.
So it's getting to be, you know, a fairly big issue. So the difference with Afani is that we have a $5 million insurance policy, and that's the core of our business. So we're basically doing everything we can to protect that. Like that insurance policy is like the quarterback, right? And we're the offensive line, and we're going to do everything to protect that. And so all of our focus is on if somebody ever wanted to leave us, that we're like, you know, eyes on that. Like, how do we protect that? How do we make sure that we only hand it over to the right person? And so we've never been SIM swapped in the 4.5 year existence. And so, you know, we want to keep that streak going. But it's interesting when I talk to the attorneys, because the last attorney that I talked to said he had eight cases and had one judge on all eight cases. And he said that the carrier's defense on all these eight separate cases is that every carrier gets SIM swap attacks, and therefore it's been normalized in the industry. And anything that's been normalized in the industry, they should not be held accountable for it because, hey, everybody's, this just happens to everybody. And so therefore we can't really be held accountable for it.
It's quite a
And
defense.
yeah, I mean, I guess in one sense, it makes sense. I mean, we, one of our biggest fans is actually an ex-CISO of one of the major carriers. And if anyone wants to see who that is, they can scroll down on the main page. And you know, he told me that we've kind of created a problem for the carriers in the sense for like the courts is because we've now created a standard that you can block SIM swaps, you can protect it. And the position was, well, maybe these carriers should, offer a FANI. And the position was that, well, if a carrier offered a FANI and then the person ended up getting SIM swapped and they go to court, then the defense of the carrier could be is, hey, we offered this higher value, higher price solution, and you chose not to do it. And you chose this cheaper option. Therefore, it's your fault. Because and but the problem is that all the carriers have said the same thing, which is if we offered a more secure one, then basically we would basically admitting that we're not as secure as we probably need to be. And on the privacy side, and why? So we used to not push the privacy side. It wasn't like strong enough, like compelling enough until now. There's been like so many data breaches of these carriers. And so I think I said this earlier, but AT&T, for example, just like you can Google it, AT&T data breach, they lost 71 million records. And so if your information is not sitting in an AT&T account, that can't be stolen. And so for the FANI customers, no FANI customers' data is in that 71 million.
Got it.
And so that has become very, very important. And so one of the faster growing segments of our customer base is actually the privacy space. And these are people that aren't even into crypto. They're not like big investors. They are just really big into privacy. They don't care even really if they get SIM swapped. It's just the fact that they don't want their information sitting there in a mobile account where it can just be tagged and profiled and collected. And because you could be profiled easily for like which way are you going to vote? What are you, do you own a gun? Like, this data collection is like over the top.
Yeah, that is wild. Hey, just a quick break and we'll get back to the show. But I want to introduce you to our very first sponsor of the Bitcoin Way podcast, Satoshi Coffee Company. Satoshi Coffee, sats.coffee is the URL. They make high quality, fresh roasted coffee, and they even put the block number to show proof of work on each bag. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see that. I'm not a coffee snob, but I'm sort of picky about what I do enjoy. And this Satoshi blend, which is one of their more popular blends, is incredible. They also have a blend from El Salvador and a couple of others. I'd highly recommend you trying out all of them. But the cool thing about Satoshi Coffee Company is they are Bitcoin only and only accept Bitcoin as payment. And as a Bitcoin Way podcast listener, you get 6.9% off if you go to sats.coffee and enter code TBW69. Again, Satoshi Coffee Company, sats.coffee. Check them out. Support Bitcoin only companies like Satoshi Coffee Company. Are most of your clients just individuals, or do you work with any corporate clients, or have you before?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, in the first couple of years, we were pretty much individuals. Now we have a ton of individuals that are like CEOs, and especially like in the cybersecurity space. So, we have CEOs of that are founders or or a VP of like a big public company that's in the cybersecurity space. Because you don't want to be a CEO of a cybersecurity company, you get SIM swapped, and then everybody realizes that what they're selling is obsolete in that case. So we've done well there. And then we have just executives scattered throughout, Wall Street and NFTs. If you name, any kind of crypto exchange, we're going to have probably a couple executives that have bought individually. A lot of companies now are just pure BYOD, especially in the crypto space. And so we've done really well in the NFT market in terms of like business. We have a number of family offices where we've got the whole entire office. So the family offices are starting into crypto. They might manage like 1.2 billion in your sort of standard type investments, but they have 100 million in crypto now. And so every time I talk to a family office that has crypto, it's like, oh, how do you secure it? And it's like, oh, I use an authenticator app. It's like, really? Like, yeah, it's off my phone. Oh, it's like, yeah, well, you better get on a FANI like in the next 2 hours. And And so then they look at everybody in a family office. You know, even the secretary could be like a weak link that could get into like their directory and company email and, you know, payroll and things. So with the family offices, we tend to get like the entire office. But we're starting to do well. We have a C-suite of around of 40 plus individuals. That's really probably that's the probably one of the biggest customers. I think that's the biggest customer we have is around 45 lines. But the business growth is starting to grow and grow.
I was thinking, I used to work in the data privacy space in a sales role, and there's an organization called the IAPP, the International Association of Privacy Professionals. And they, I'm just thinking, like all of the people who are geeking out about privacy all day long, I bet they would love for their employees and contractors and to be working with Afani and sort
Well,
of
think about it.
plug that hole.
I mean, if your doctor gets SIM swapped, if you have a CPA that gets SIM swapped, like you don't really realize that actually somebody else could be a threat of your information. And in fact, there's an article I posted on LinkedIn probably about 4 days ago, that it's an article about how an executive got SIM swapped and it affected 66,000 people. So that through that SIM swap, they were able to get access into it. And there's two insurance companies that came out and warned about the importance of defending SIM swaps because, I mean, these are going to be gigantic penalties for these data breaches. So, you know, T-Mobile got when they got hit for 37 million, I think the penalty it ended up costing about 500 million. And that was the largest data breach penalty at that point. So it'd be interesting to see what AT&T gets hit with. But you know, law firms, if you Google like law firm data breach and liability, you'll see all these articles about how you know, law firms can be held themselves liable. And there's like specific penalties towards like a payment, like a cost per record that gets released. And so the business side of things, I think, is probably where we're going to start, you know, growing even faster.
I bet. I imagine, what I wasn't thinking about so much is the trickle down effect of if my brother or best friend or someone like that who I'm in communication with, if they were SIM swapped and they've got access to private messages or just things like that, like are there all of a sudden you like, hey, like maybe I don't have anything to hide, but I want to hide it anyway. It's just, I don't want my messages public or access to any, sort of sensitive dialogue that I've had back and forth.
Well,
It's
that SEC, you recall the early announcement of the Bitcoin ETF by the
Oh
SEC. That
yeah.
was a number swap.
Oh
So
gosh, I didn't
whoever,
realize that.
yeah, so whoever was controlling the SEC's X.com account, they did a number swap, took over that, and then posted that the Bitcoin ETF was approved. And you can Google that online as well. And there's a bunch of people complaining because they're like, hey, how's come the X.com account got reactivated so quickly? Because normally when there's a SIM swap, so there's a, and I'll give you another case. So there's a two co-founders, and I can't give the details on this because there's probably going to be a lot of legal things going on around this. But it was two co-founders that ha they were in they have a business in the crypto space. One of the co-founders ends up getting SIM swapped. And they use that SIM swap to take over their X.com account. They use that X.com account to announce that they just dropped a new token and that you can buy that token. So they have a bunch of followers, of course, that start wanting to buy this token and they're sending over their Bitcoin or an Ethereum or whatever to buy the crypto. Of course, once they get enough, they shut it down. And then the co-founders had to, you know, go to X.com and, hey, because they couldn't even access to their X.com at that point, and then have it shut down, so I mean, you know, who do you sue in that case? Is it the carrier? Is it the business? Is it X.com? Is it you know, all the above? So yeah, the attacks don't have to be about just trying to steal your Bitcoin. It can be to steal your social media. If you're a small business, and you've got like you have a mobile number attached to like the hosting account where the website, is run from, and somebody can take over that. And a lot of times it's an insider. Like for the case I was just talking about, it's most likely somebody probably knew that they used that mobile number to control their businesses x.com. And I know of there was a couple in Phoenix where this woman had built up a really good business. Revenues were like 650, 700,000 in this IT business, and then she ended up breaking up with her boyfriend. And they had the business together. Well, he ends up SIM swapping her and took her website down, took everything down, her payroll down, everything, and basically destroyed her through a SIM swap. So, a lot of times I think that these are like insider deals, or somebody knows you well enough to know that, if you've been talking about crypto, you've been talking about how much money you've made. I mean, you really have to be careful about, because it could be a friend of a friend that is the one that starts asking questions of like, oh, what do they use to trade on, and where do they store their crypto, and so you got to be really careful about that.
Crazy. So, okay, practice so just some practical points about Afani. So, like if I'm an Afani customer and I want to upgrade to a new phone and pay in installments, first of all, are installments an option, or do you have to pay cash for a phone? And second, if I want to do that upgrade, is that the sort of event that goes through this sort of the 11-step verification in that?
Yeah, we're definitely going to verify that, because that's a one of your typical sort of social engineering type attempts at a SIM swap. So, we would verify and then help support that process of pointing it over to a new phone. We don't sell phones, and that's actually one of the it's actually part of our sort of our security. Because one of the fastest growing ways to SIM swap somebody is sort of this two-step process where, let's say I gather information about you and I create an ID that, so I can pretend I'm you, and I go into a phone store, and then I get a phone off of your account. And now once I have a, and they'll order a second line off your account. Now you as the account owner, you won't know this until you get the bill. And so now I've got a phone that's under your account. I've got a mobile number under your account. Then I go home. Then I call the 800 number and say, hey, I just bought a new phone and I want to switch my old line over to the new one. And that's a very common way of SIM swapping somebody. That's what happened to Bart Stevens, who's the CEO of Blockchain Ventures. And he lost $6 million from that particular SIM swap scam. So we don't sell phones. So you have to have an unlocked phone, and the phone cannot be financed by through a carrier. So that's how they lock people in. Like there's no term for the service itself. What they do is they finance the phone over 2 years, 3 years, and that's how they lock you in, because they will lock that mobile number to that phone, and you won't be able to move that number to a different phone until you've paid off that phone.
Got it. So you could, like, if you want an iPhone, you could finance through Apple, I assume. Or I assume Apple has some option like that, and then just tell them, hey, I'm gonna, I'll work with a carrier and come to you guys or something.
Yeah, I mean, how you buy the phone is sort of irrelevant, except if you were to finance it through a specific
Through a
carrier,
carrier.
they're going to lock you in. Yeah.
So I remember just a couple more questions for you. So I remember when we spoke offline before we tried our initial interview. You talked about, I'm trying to remember what it was called now, but you talked about like some of the ways that the reasons you're like, if you're a Bitcoiner, if you're into crypto or what have you, the reason you're exposed is, well, first of all, because you might not secure your assets in cold storage. And so you've got exposed, you've got assets accessible on the phone. But you talked about there was some sort of an attack whereby, someone could walk around like a Bitcoin conference with a backpack and they'd have like effectively something acting as like a cellular antenna. Could you explain that sort of thing? Like what is that? How does it work?
Yeah, so the official device's name is, it's called a Stingray. Yeah, and this
Okay.
is what the FBI uses and any intelligence unit, and then I think like the SWAT teams for like the police units can get warrants and to be able to use it. But these are it's basically a cell tower spoofer, very, very a sophisticated cell tower spoofer with and if you buy if you get a hold of an official one, you can they actually have the capability of pushing spyware to phones. Now the ones that I was talking to you about that you have to worry about is what's called an IMSI catcher. And the IMSI catcher is a do-it-yourself built Stingray. And so years ago, somebody put out an educational video of like, this is illegal, like hey, we're going to teach you how to build a crock pot, bomb, but don't
Yeah.
do it. They did that with these do-it-yourself IMSI catchers. And so you can literally go out and get the information of like the parts you need, software, how to piece it together. And so you can build your own cell tower spoofer that's and it's called an IMSI catcher. And they're the size of like a iPad mini with three antennas that you attach to it. And you just attach that to a laptop. So it can fit in a backpack. And what you could do, for example, is go to like the Bitcoin conference in Miami, where you've got all those people in that conference room. And you like a typical way that they might use it is you turn on a cell jammer. And what that does is put everybody's phone to sleep. And because all smartphones have this battery saving feature in it where they'll just kind of go to sleep and save battery when it can't have a connection. And then you turn up a nefarious cell network, and then you unjam it, and all the phones wake up, and they basically start saying like, hello, hello, like looking for towers, and they'll connect to the strongest signal. So they may get a response from like three different towers, and one of those would be the cell tower spoofer. And if that's the closest one with the strongest signal, they'll actually connect to that. And so once they're connected to it, those things can do things like collect IMSI numbers, and also you can record unencrypted phone calls, any kind of data usage or text messages, your standard text or unencrypted. And if it just simply can gather IMSI numbers, then the IMSI number actually, the first couple characters tell you what country it's from. And the next couple tell you what carrier they're using. And then the next set of digits are specific to your phone. So I would be able to see like these 100 people are from Australia using Telstra. And obviously they're at a crypto conference. So, 99% chance they're into crypto. Or I see, 300 people that's like US, AT&T or T-Mobile. And so I know, so now I can take this information. I might be able, if I have a friend that works for like T-Mobile, for example, I might be able to have them look at the SIM numbers and then tell me who the customer is. And so it's, and there's other attacks. There's what's called an SS7 attack. And so once you have like an IMSI number and somebody's cell number, then there's some remote type attacks that you can do. And so it's another reason why the privacy matters, because if somebody got an IMSI number of like a funny customer, and then they said, hey, Verizon, tell me who this is, Verizon's not going to have your info. They can't tell them. And so that just makes it really difficult. And so they're just going to skip over that, and they're going to go to the other 500 people where they actually can get all the information they need. But the IMSI catchers it is a growing threat. Like if you Google like IMSI catcher White House or IMSI catcher Pentagon, you'll see even like the head of Pentagon said that yeah, we got an issue with these because they detect them being turned on around the White House or around the Pentagon.
Wow.
And so and it's hard, like if you're driving around in a circle, right? Like and you have it on for 5 minutes and then you turn it off. Well, you can't track it. And so, no, I mean, I've never heard of anyone ever getting caught using an IMSI catcher. And to give you another example of like what's possible, is one of the managed service providers that is one of our partners. I was talking to him about IMSI catchers, and if anyone ever, asked them to, solve this issue, and he said, "Oh, it's funny you say that because we just built our third IMSI catcher, and we actually charge a lot of money." And so they have hotels like Sheraton, Marriott, and others, as one of the examples, that pay them to come in and try and break into, like their networks. And so I was like, "Oh, I would love to have a story. Like, can you tell me an example?" So he said, "Well, last week we went to this hotel in Atlanta, and we went into the lobby, and we created a Wi-Fi network that was the duplicate name of the guest network. So if it was, hotel guest, they just created hotel guest. And then they and so then they did a denial of service attack on the hotel's actual guest network. And every single device in that hotel that had auto join would rejoin automatically within seconds to this new Wi-Fi network that they had opened up."
Wow.
And it's illegal for them to actually capture the traffic or look at it in any way. So they flipped it right off. But he's basically, what we did is we showed the hotel that in 90 seconds we could actually take over the whole guest Wi-Fi, that we can do that to the corporate Wi-Fi, and then we could actually and we could do this from a room in the center of your hotel. We could do it from the parking garage. And then he's like, "Also, we could just go out in the parking lot and turn this into cellular IMSI catcher and do the same thing with cellular." And they don't do it on the cellular side when there's other people that are within range of it. Because even if the hotel were to give them permission to turn on the cellular part of it, if it was on for long enough, authorities might show up. But it's illegal to do that. But yeah, it's kind of a growing threat. And so these independent nodes and shared cellular nodes and things like that. Like, everybody knows, like, hey, if I go to Starbucks Wi-Fi or use public Wi-Fi, I should probably use a VPN. And everybody knows about Wi-Fi sniffers. Well, it's the same thing on the cellular side. And so the industry is trying to figure out ways of, like, how do we eliminate these unofficial towers so it's going straight to the tower, and we're working on it. So we hope to have a solution out in the second quarter of next year called Black Seal, that has a packet inspection that's looking for IMSI catchers and stingrays and DNS hijacking and SS7 location tracking, and it'll all be built into the network. And it's a difficult thing to do. It takes time,
Sure.
but we're pretty excited about it. But for now, we're focused on SIM swaps, privacy, and the insurance part of it.
Awesome. No, it sounds like some cool stuff coming. Okay, so last question for you then. Besides working with Afani, what are just one, two, three sort of practical ways that like a typical iPhone, Android user can better protect themselves? And so not exclusively from SIM swaps, but just thinking, with more of a defensive posture.
I mean, so there's videos on this, but I always, because I get asked by every prospect that calls us, and I always recommend, like, go on YouTube and search for, like, top security settings for an iPhone, and you'll see there's some legitimate people on there that have done, the top 15 settings you have to change. So things like setting your Wi-Fi so it's not auto join. I mean, if unless it's for, like, your home Wi-Fi or you have complete control over it, but you just don't want that auto, because I could set up a Wi-Fi router inside of an apartment building or where there's, like, traffic, and then just flash it with spyware, and then just not to put a password on it. And then as you walk by, your phone may auto join, and all I need is just, a half a second to grab a couple pieces of data off there. And so the auto join can be, dangerous. But, look at your AirDrop settings and your Bluetooth settings, and just make sure you have complete control over that. Some people will turn on AirDrop, and then they want to use AirDrop for something, so they from like a friend, so they open it up to anybody, and then forget to, like, turn it off. And so just look at the settings. The other thing would be is that people will take, like, an Android phone and then or Apple, and they set up iCloud or Gmail, and they set it up with the same email they're using for Coinbase and their bank and their Cox cable bill. And you're basically just setting up the bowling pin, you know, dominoes basically, like by using that same email. So I always tell people to set your phone up with an email that is only used on your phone and that you don't use it for any other accounts. And then the other thing is just how you use your phone. Just, you know, these text messages that everybody gets where it's like an Amazon package is waiting for you. Click here, or we're going to send it back, or USPS, or you know, you click on those and they can do things like execute a couple lines of code, which could grab information like what's your phone number? Or, well, if they're texting you, they know that, but it could grab like what's your phone model and what's your device ID, what's your SIM number, you know, grab a couple things off your phone. Then they can use these AI search tools, know about you. And then they'll know that you're using, you know, Mint Mobile through that, because you clicked on that. They call it Mint Mobile. Now it's like, oh, I lost my phone, and this is the device ID, and this is the SIM number, and this is the phone model, and they already have all the other information. And of course, they can say like, oh, well, tell me your PIN. It's like, oh, well, I stored the PIN on the phone, and it's lost. So they'll say, oh, okay, no problem. We'll verify you another way. But you know, psychologically, if you tell that support rep that what the device ID is and the IMSI number is, they're already going to be thinking, well, it's got to be him. So I'm
Right.
going to get this. Yes, I'll verify him because they obviously, you know, must own this device. And so just be really careful about like what you click on. You know, even images. You know, it's this. You can hide these what's called like hiding a pixel in an image. So somebody could send you an image and you click on it, opens up. And it could drop like a tracking, you know, grab the IP of your phone and now you're being tracked. I
Yeah.
could take a link to a restaurant. Let's say you and I are talking and you're like, oh, I really love pizza. And I'm like, oh, well, what I could do is I could find a pizza place near you. I take the link of that pizza place and I put it in these, they're typically offshore websites. I put it in this and say, give me a tracking link. And it gives me this new link. Now I text you that, so you check out this pizza place. You click on that, and the actual pizza place comes up. But what you don't realize is that you actually clicked on a tracking link that just did the executed what it needed to do to track you, and then forwarded it and opened up that pizza restaurant. And so you think everything was like kosher, but now I've just found a way to like track you and pay. Hey, if you fly to Los Angeles, I'm gonna know.
Wow. That
It's
is, yeah, that is wild. So many vulnerabilities. So, hey, Mark, I can't thank you enough for your time. Glad we got to do this. Could you give a handoff where to find you, Afani, any other sort of information you'd like people to look up about you and your team?
yeah. So, I mean, you can definitely go to afani.com and then you can find information about the team members. I'm on LinkedIn and anybody's more than welcome to connect with me on LinkedIn. And you know, we'll do a and we'll offer a promo code for Bitcoin Way as well.
Okay.
And so I'll send you the information for that. So why don't we do that? And I'll offer up a promo code so that you can then advertise, you know, a link to where they can come to afani.com/ you know, Bitcoin Way. And then grab a promo code so you can offer some value to your viewers and your customer base. And so I'd love to do that. And or they, you know, they'll find the phone number on our website. And then also we have a live chat bot as well. And then there's also a book a sales call button. So if you want to get to sales right now, like we are just jam-packed. It's crazy. Like we're so overloaded that I'm actually taking some overflow sales calls on these appointments. And so the easiest thing in terms of getting a hold of an actual salesperson at Afani is just to use that book a sales call button.
Terrific. Perfect. Well, hey, I appreciate your time. I look forward to signing up myself. So we'll talk offline about getting me and hopefully my whole family on board with you guys. But Mark, thanks for what you're doing and look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Cheers. And that's a wrap. Again, I thought this was a very helpful conversation, very useful in thinking about some of the attack vectors that exist today, particularly in the mobile device space. Check out Afani, check out what they're doing. Truly, my wife and I are going to get signed up for this, and I'm hoping to rope some of the rest of my family, maybe some friends into it as well, because I just think it's so important that we're all, especially people who you're messaging with and in constant communication with, if one person has a vulnerability, then to some extent, everyone does. And so again, check them out, follow them on X, keep up with the things they're doing. And of course, if you need self-custody help of your Bitcoin, the Bitcoin Way can help. Check us out at thebitcoinway.com/podcast. And you can follow us on X at @thebitcoinway_. And then if you have any questions, comments, feedback for me, you can check out my X profile. It's @theothermjordan. And my personal Bitcoin newsletter that I send out each week is blackhatbitcoin.substack.com if the Bitcoin basics seem of interest to you. Until next time, this is Michael Jordan signing off.